Hello, my name is Sam Chandra and this is Deep Sky. Each week we go into conversation, helping you to explore and understand the uncharted waters of the intersection of artificial intelligence, aviation, and the future of humanity. I am an airline captain, a student of artificial intelligence, and your guide to navigating the new world of aviation transformed by artificial intelligence. This week's guest is Lee Glazier. He is the head of service integrity at Rolls-Royce and led the development of the Alethea framework, which is the subject of today's conversation. We go straight into discussing the framework, so I'll spend a minute or two explaining what it actually is. The Alethea framework is a world-first tool that takes desired ethics and helps managers and developers of artificially intelligent systems to ensure that those ethics are furthered by the operation of the AI system that they are making. The significance of this framework shouldn't be underestimated. While there has been hundreds of ethical AI frameworks, toolkits, and structures published, a minuscule fraction of them go beyond philosophy and provide a proceduralized, robust method to help the developers and owners of those systems to ensure that when they are in operation, the systems will do good rather than harm. The actual Alethea framework under discussion today is an A3-sized checklist aimed to be a clear 32-step process that any organization can follow so that its AI is accurate, well-managed, and has a positive impact on the world. And, just like an audit, it incorporates the requirements to provide real evidence that the step has been completed. At the center of this tool are steps ensuring the trustworthiness of the outputs of the AI system. For Rolls-Royce and the wider aviation community, trustworthiness of artificial intelligence will be essential to realize its benefits in any safety-critical context. So to hear from one of the leading figures in making this happen, please listen on. This is Deep Sky. Could you please explain, how does Rolls-Royce use artificial intelligence?
We actually use artificial intelligence across most parts of the business now. Anybody who's looking at this space will find that the barriers to entry are so low that it means lots and lots of people can start to use it. My daughter taught herself the basics over her Christmas holiday last year. But for us, it originated really in our engine health monitoring systems, where we've been doing advanced analytics since the late 80s. But now it's across all areas of the business, and including some areas that we would describe as business critical.
And how broad does that use go? Maybe you could start by which part of Rolls-Royce don't use AI?
I don't know of any part of Rolls-Royce that doesn't use AI. We don't have any formal deployment yet into any safety critical areas, and we'll touch on that, I'm sure, a bit later. But everything from business processes, repetitive processes, right through to, as I say, monitoring the health of engines in areas of reliability and availability. As I say, we don't touch safety critical yet, but I'm sure one day there'll be approvals from regulators to even do that.
So what was the problem that you did see that you and your team saw in the AI ethics world in particular?
I think it was very much very similar to real world. We saw that we could have very similar challenges that are out there in the press around the potential for social impact. And the biggie for us was the trustworthiness, but absolutely the social impact. Being responsible there, I sat down to do the preliminary work, working with our unions, human resources, our ethics department, to look at how we would do this in a very responsible way.
You saw what was happening outside of the aerospace and went, we're going to run into these problems. Let's
we
get ahead
do,
of
absolutely,
the curve.
Let's
go ahead and address the trustworthiness issue that we could also be facing. So,
and potential for social impact. Deployment into a factory could impact our own internal resources. Right. So that needed to be reflected in developing a deployment framework in discussions with the unions.
And Was this the genesis of this particular part in AI, of AI ethics in Rolls-Royce? How far along the use of AI in Rolls-Royce did that come about? Had you already been using it for decades?
Yes, we had. And one of the things that we'd noticed up until that point was we'd never noticed an area where we'd had a reduction in jobs, for example. Everything right. was augmenting humans, allowing humans to do a better job, really, is the way I always described it. So the same number of humans, but humans doing a better job was where it had always been. So absolutely no ethical concerns there in terms of social impact.
Right.
But as we were then getting more and more advanced, we started to realize there was the potential for social impact. So that was the point where we said, we need to look at what other people have done, what's around, and develop a framework that we can deploy into our business.
So how does this framework solve the social impact problem?
Okay, the way it was developed was to take basically the research into what was already out there. So there are lots of really good, I call them principal references. They're global. They're very mature. They say, in a lot of ways, they say the same sort of thing, which is right. really good. You can rely on it. If a lot of people are saying the same thing, especially from different parts of the globe, then, you know, where there are multicultures involved, if they're all saying a very similar thing, then you can rely on it. So that was the start point. That was the basis. And I looked at those great guidelines and put them into a framework, which consists of basically three sections: that's social impact, accuracy and trust, and governance. But what was missing from all of those principal references was really then not the what of the ethic, but the how to deploy. Mm. And that's really one of the big USPs of the Alethea framework, was taking an ethic and then creating some realization principles that could then be proceduralized into our business. When that was peer reviewed by some of the big tech companies and our peer industries, we asked them to look at it and compare it with what they'd got. And it just kept coming back. Nothing is this comprehensive and nothing goes into this level of detail or this advance to be able to actually proceduralize something. Most people were still at the stage of the ethic rather than realization principles. And that's why we've given it away to the world. It was released to the world last December under Creative Commons license.
Yeah, so I did download it. It's several pages of checklists with the realization principles and then the supplied evidence. So is that what you're talking about, the one that's on the website? Yep. So they had not seen anything as detailed as that before?
Not as detailed in terms of going into realization principles. I found two in all of my research, only two in the whole world, that actually did have realization principles. None of them had then the evidence to show the principle had been realized. And none of them had the trustworthiness monitoring that we've got in there as well. So it came back as a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I'm shocked right now listening to what you're saying.
Yeah. But the uniqueness was what came back from the peer reviews. And so to help advance artificial intelligence globally, our CEO said, let's release it to the world. And so we did. And we just hope that anybody who uses it will feedback to us any potential areas for improvement so it can continue to be improved for the good of all.
Wow, yes. You had a look around. There were two other frameworks out there with actual realization principles, but you said none with a requirement for evidence for those realization principles.
Not explicitly. I think implicitly you would need to, I presume, in their own governance, but it wasn't there explicitly. But what wasn't in either of them was solving the trustworthiness, bias, mutation, malfunction issue that people grapple with. And that is in our framework as well.
Mm-hmm. You also have a large extra part to your algorithmic assurance process that you've embedded in your processes.
The key to what you're talking about there, the algorithmic assurance, is actually in the framework. Oh. You'll see five parallel checks, which is the other big USP. And that is taken from some advanced analytics that is in a safety critical context. It's not AI, because AI hasn't gone there yet, but it is, I would call it advanced analytics in a safety critical context. And I've lifted the philosophy for assuring those and put it into the Alethea framework. So there is, I'll call it a module right at the centre that will monitor and identify bias, mutation, malfunctioning of the AI system.
And by the way, who are the other two frameworks produced by?
I knew you'd ask that. What was really almost shocking was they are both from the UK. Not that, that should be a shock that it's from the UK, but only from the UK police, which were really mature in their deployment of AI-based technologies for facial recognition. And their framework was really good, but it did miss monitoring and identification of bias and accuracy, and their own report stated that. And because of that, unfortunately, the UK Parliament banned them for a while from deploying. And the other was the UK's Royal Society of Statisticians. And again, no trustworthiness at the centre of it. But two really good, advanced and very mature frameworks, which I took benefit from as well.
Okay, UK seems to be at the front of it. And have you found people publishing their copies, no, their original ideas for frameworks since?
Yes, yeah, there are lots around. They're continually to be produced and they're generally good. You said ours is 3 pages long. You can actually print it on one A3 sheet, but you often find coming out of the consultancies, bless them, 60-page long AI ethical frameworks, which are very comprehensive, but generally stay at the ethics rather than going as far as deployment. Although people are starting to go there now, the Alethea framework, we started it around 2 years ago, but they are moving into deployment as well. And realization principles, they may not call them that, but the trustworthiness is the big thing that people are struggling with.
When you're saying that trustworthiness really is the thing that is missing, could you explain that further, the trustworthiness part as a concept, especially in an aerospace context?
Yeah, explain it conceptually and then I'll go into an aerospace type context. Lots of the academic research is looking inside the black box, right down to network level, coding, how can we identify, and they use the terms of transparency, explainability, those sorts of things. And that research I actually do find fascinating because going back to how does the brain work, which is not far off where they're going, is one of the fundamental pieces of research that I think is interesting and is vital. But if you came to me and said you'd made a decision to not take off, for example, I wouldn't say, let's have a brain scan and see which neurons fired, what are the chemicals doing? I wouldn't approach your decision to not fly from a biological standpoint. Mm-hmm. I would ask you, what was the data that you were using? What was the context around this? Have you ever made that decision before? Has anybody else made that decision? Those are the sorts of questions I would ask. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, really, input versus output type of analysis. At the end of that, I would be very confident in accepting or otherwise your recommendation to not fly without ever doing a biological scan of your brain. So why do we do that with AI? That's the question. So if I then take what you would do as a human and apply that into an aerospace context, or actually any context, then taking those same sorts of principles and philosophies, I can do a similar sort of thing. We call them the Rolls-Royce 5 checks philosophy. But if I look at, for example, engine health monitoring, a sense check. So does the output, does the result make sense? I'll give you an example. If an analysis stated that the age of the engine has gone down after a flight, then quite clearly that doesn't make any sense. Every flight an engine needs to age. So if the output came that the engine had got younger after a flight, we would know there'd been a malfunction in there. And within our predictive maintenance system, one of them, there are 14 sense checks running continuously looking at, does the output make sense?
Okay.
Then synthesized flights. So we have the equivalent of a a synthetic airline. So a million synthesized flights, and we just push them through the system. We know what the answer should be to 10 right. decimal places. One of those on average through the system every 15 minutes. It's like doing an MOT on the AI system. If we were to do it on the AI system or predictive maintenance or whatever, every 15 minutes. And statistically, it's almost impossible for the system to have gone wrong and to 10 decimal places you not detect it.
Mm.
Continuously running parallel checks. So on a predictive maintenance system, same flight, different data, different algorithm, do I get the same answer? For a robot inspector, that could be a human doing a parallel check.
Right. Okay.
Have you done the right number of checks? So comprehensiveness, that's easy on one every flight, or there's the right number on every flight. Compare with your ERP system if you're inspecting components. Mm-hmm. If you're CV sifting, has every CV had an analysis done on it? That's going ethical. All those sorts of things, you can do comprehensiveness checks. And then assessing for corruptions of data. So cyclic redundancy checks being one of the main ones that we use for transmitted data. So all of those things can be done. They're the same as what I would do if I was assessing a decision you'd made, but it's very much output, input, comparison, looking for malfunction, bias, or mutation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I do know that explainability is a very hot topic, but I also know that in the aerospace world, everyone's going, just cool down on the whole explainability thing. It's cool, but it's not necessarily what we need here, the trustworthiness piece. Would you say it's the answer to explainability that we actually need?
I think it is at the moment, yes. We have been doing some research looking at, in biomedical science, how do they detect genetic mutations? And there's some really interesting work there, both looking, if I can call it this, inside the black box, but interesting genetic mutation identification. They have almost the identical to our five parallel checks that exists. Okay. That was a big surprise in the research that I did, but it is there as well. And also we're doing some research looking at malfunctions within the brain as well. And they're really exciting. But in the meantime, we're using almost an outside the black box, comparing output versus input. We've got something that's extremely robust.
Yeah, 1 million flights every 15 minutes, even if it was just that one check, it sounds quite robust. Do you have to follow some sort of design assurance process in your area, or is that not really required for you?
Rolls-Royce, there is software standards for creation of software, and I would say 90% of that is applicable to AI. The bit that's less strong in those areas, and it's again another global challenge, mm-hmm. is around data. Mm-hmm. So using data for training models, testing models, and then the quality of the data from production. It's a big challenge for the world. There's human bias in that data set. Will, if there is, will, how much, how biased it is. And we have the same thing from sensors. A sensor can drift. It can drift more if there's a certain humidity in the air. It's the same thing. So whether it's a machine bias or a human bias, it can have a big impact. And it's understanding what that impact is. Now, we've got those five parallel checks. So if I can synthesize a CV, for example, to test whether a system's functioning correctly, those five parallel checks are very applicable in the area of data quality. But they will generally tell me that there's a problem, not necessarily tell me where the problem is, or even correct the problem. I've then got to do that. So moving more and more into data engineering, data quality procedures is one of the big areas that we're leading at the moment. And again, that's groundbreaking stuff that the whole world is grappling with. So I would say we have got pretty much 90% of what we need from the existing quality standards for software generation within Rolls-Royce, and they form part of the quality assurance of AI. That data area is an area that we can improve on, and we are doing.
Right. Now stepping outside sort of the Rolls-Royce world and thinking about how organizations will be using the Alethea framework, various ethics governance frameworks. What do you think are the main challenges to any organization that wants to implement an ethical AI system and actually do it?
Going back to trustworthiness is absolutely fundamental, because you've seen it in the press. If the public, if your own workforce start to not trust the outputs from an AI system, then it'll just be bad press, bad press, bad reputation, and that will cause a cultural issue either with your own workforce or with your market who are going to receive AI-based products. So that for me is one of the big issues. It used to be you'd got to be a PhD data scientist to develop it. That is no longer the case. The barriers to entry are so low now.
Just using AWS, machine learning as a service.
Yeah.
No prior knowledge necessary. Yeah.
You know, it is really good, these low-code, no-code technologies that are out there. I find that really exciting. It does bring challenges in then around the governance. So again, part of trustworthy AI is having a really good governance process around it to assure yourselves about the development and ensure that what you've just created is high quality.
So who do you think is going to use the Alethea framework, or who is using it, should I ask?
All sorts of people, including areas where I would say that there's potentially either an existing or a developing ethical concern, even recruitment companies using AI-based CV sifting or even AI bots for preliminary interviews. So we've had discussions with one of the world's biggest recruitment companies who are very excited about using the Alethea framework. I've spoken with oncologists, biomedical science, pharmaceutical companies, automotive, looking at autonomous vehicles, driverless cars, smart motorways. It's vast. It's almost anywhere.
Because sort of anyone can use it. You talked about the issue of trust as being a new paradigm or a new major concern when you're using these systems. That's something that pretty much every single person I've talked to on this podcast has mentioned, because there's new concentrations of power involved in AI systems. You can suddenly do a lot more with potentially one decision maker, human decision maker, that is. At the start of the podcast, you were talking about consulting with the unions. Now, I'm a pilot by trade. We have probably some of the best unions in the world, if you could call them the best. They're very good at what they do, generally speaking. Could you talk about your engagement with unions when you were developing this framework and when you were developing AI that could replace people?
Yeah, sure. I think it's very important, right, as soon as you're developing a framework like the Alethea framework, to involve people who represent the workforce. So not just your HR department, but the unions, the works council, whatever you have in place. First of all, that's a responsible thing to do, but it also works. And they were very welcoming and very pleased and positive. They understand, you know, new technology comes in. Rolls-Royce or the aerospace industry does not embrace these new technologies, Rolls-Royce would lose out to the competition, quite obviously. Mm-hmm. So it is within the union's interest that we embrace these new technologies for the good of the whole of the employment and workforce. So they are very responsible and understand that is the case. Mm-hmm. So to talk to them about something like artificial intelligence and take them through the goodness that it can bring to the organization so that they understand we're not just doing this for the sake of it. And that actually is the first question the first area within the Alethea framework is just show that you're not doing this for the sake of it. It will have goodness come out of it. But then to say understanding how this is going to then potentially impact, because they are intended to make workforces more effective and more efficient, then there's obviously a potential outcome from that. And to sit with the unions and say, so what are we going to put into this framework to give you assurance that we're going to do this in an ethical way and in a caring way And if there is going to be the potential impact on resource levels, that we talk about it right from the beginning and we look at redeployment, we look at reskilling, we even look at potential impact for our external supply chain, because it could impact either our supply chain or our customers. So look at how could there be a potential impact on them, because we need our customers and our suppliers to obviously be sustainable, and AI could impact them when we deploy it internally as well. Looking at all of those things, but sitting down really early with the unions and allowing them to change parts of the framework. So there were some word changes agreed with the unions as well. So giving them the pen and say, okay, how would you like that wording? What would you like in there?
And so, basically asking them, okay, these are the new rules that we're going to abide by. You can help us write them. And since we've both written them, we're going to have a lot more respect for them. So it seems that you may have borrowed from such initiatives as the IOSA audit or other well-known aviation procedural systems, environments. The fact that Rolls-Royce is an aerospace company, do you think that makes them a pioneer just by the nature of where you have to operate?
I think you're probably right. The work we do with the regulator, so EASA is the one that we're the closest to most of the time. And EASA, especially around AI now, EASA has really comprehensive and excellent AI roadmap. So currently, EASA would not approve the use of AI in a safety critical context. That's quite understandable and a very responsible standpoint that we respect. But they have a really good AI roadmap. And I use that to guide me, and I ensure that I'm aligning with it as we're developing our quality procedures. So that's probably the biggest input into the development of AI governance, I would say, within Rolls-Royce. Then, again, going back to the trustworthiness, that five checks philosophy in the Alethea framework comes from a safety critical context, not AI, but it is a safety critical context. So to be able to take that, put it right in the center of the ethics framework, is all goodness and all come out of the aerospace industry and a close alignment with the EASA. So we actually see the regulators as a beneficial checkpoint in these things. And one day, EASA has a roadmap for AI to be deployed. So one day we will be sitting in front of EASA as the regulator. For me to be able to already see their framework and their roadmap is really helpful.
And what did EASA approve? You said they approved the five checks. What was that for? And why did you need their approval for it?
Any of our systems that go on to an aircraft need to be regulatory approved by EASA. So we have predictive maintenance. So say it's not safety critical. The engine health monitoring is not safety critical. So lots of things. We sit in the advanced analytics space with EASA. The engine health monitoring has got artificial intelligence in it. So it has been in front of EASA. Again, that isn't safety critical. But then when we get through to predicting life of components, where we are getting into safety critical, again, they're not AI-based, but they are analytics-based. And that's where the five checks was born. Right. And those systems have been in front of EASA. And we have got their approval of those systems because they've been, developed in line with their requirements. So they're developed in line with their requirements. And then there's monitoring on there as well, to give you that trustworthiness, continued trustworthiness through its life. So I was able to take a philosophy from an analytical context and move it into an AI context to assure the trustworthiness.
Okay.
Again, I would stress that isn't in a safety critical context yet, but working through alongside EASA's roadmap, one day, hopefully we'll get there.
And so what's your best case for ethical AI at Rolls-Royce? For the next 20 years, where would you like to see it?
I think it'll be in all areas. I think it'll be more and more into areas where we actually design more efficient product with less carbon impact. That's one of the big thrusts, not just of Rolls-Royce, but of, thankfully, of most people on the planet. So to be able to use AI to augment our design processes to enable us to do those make those designs more efficient, but ultimately carbon-free power, things such as electric, all-electric propulsion systems, power. AI is going to be right at the heart of helping us do that quicker, more efficiently, better, and give us a better use of materials. That's going to be more and more the thrust within Rolls-Royce. But I do see it impacting all areas. Why does it require a human to order various things because the stocks are low? That's so basic and absolutely, well, generally not safety critical. It might be business critical, but it's so easy to do. It'll be across all business. And I do see already it does enable humans to do more interesting jobs, even in those areas.
So you see AI as an enabler to really achieve perhaps the broader goals of Rolls-Royce. And do you feel that the trustworthiness structures and the governance structures and the Alethea framework and the checklists, do you think they've reached their full maturity, or how much further do those pieces have to go?
The development of, I'll call it the AI and analytics ethical framework, because that was what it is called in Rolls-Royce in our quality of procedures, was never intended to be released to the world because we thought the world had already got things like that.
So
we were developing it for our own use. So I would say my language in it is probably very Rolls-Royce technical language. So it's already been identified to us by the user base. It would be better if it was written, shall we say, plain English.
Yeah.
So there will be one released soon, version 2, which will be in less Rolls-Royce language, shall we say, therefore more accessible, which is goodness. So we intend to keep it maturing. And those Rolls-Royce 5 checks for trustworthiness, I'm sure, can be improved and more accessible as well and more scalable, although we are finding they are very scalable with a tiny bit of interpretation and imagination. They are philosophies rather than, prescriptions, shall we say.
And in some ways that makes it more broad, but also I think you did mention once that procedures and prescriptions can be an enabler to know that you have dotted the I's and crossed the T's proverbially, and to know that you have a checklist can be very helpful. Do you see it as Rolls-Royce's place to develop multiple specific frameworks, or after this generalization, this version 2, will you take your feet off the accelerator and go, okay, everyone has what they need from us, we'll carry on with our job here at Rolls-Royce?
The fact that on the end of it, there's a box that says evidence, that evidence could be not applicable because. So the framework as it stands is very adaptable and intended to be adaptable within Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, true.
Go and speak to the unions. Well, it might be that this is going to have no impact at all on resources because it's an AI project purely that has a trustworthiness challenge and no impact on resources. So that could quite simply be not applicable. It isn't going to for the following reasons. So it's almost adaptable as it already is. But if there was a company that was using the Alethea framework who was never going to have any particular challenges in a third of those checklist rows, then they could just remove them. That would be for them to do, and we wouldn't be stopping anybody from doing that.
What do you think are the biggest challenges ahead for your team or what you're trying to accomplish?
Okay, for the next work, I would say it is around, when I say the quality assurance, as I said earlier, we've probably got 80%, 90% already in there in terms of the software standards, and they are very applicable. The big challenge is around data.
Yeah.
And that's where we're moving now. And people will say, there's lots out there around data. There is, but things that you can actually proceduralize into an industrial context, which is where we always need to get to. And that's where the Alethea framework is. It is something that is fully proceduralized in Rolls-Royce. It's in the quality management system with a number on it and change control on it, etc. So that is fully proceduralized. To do the same thing with quality of data for training, testing, and then in production, that's where we're moving now. So to be able to proceduralize the assurance of the quality of the data that's going into these systems in a change control proceduralized way, we are working on now. And that is quite exciting, actually, because again, you're working into a thing areas and you go, oh, I thought there'd be something that I could copy and use. We're finding more and more isn't the case yet again.
Yes. And do you find it's easier because you're dealing with mostly machine data and not people's names and addresses and phone numbers? You are able to do more and you're able to explore and write these procedures more fluidly?
That's a really good question. People's names, not necessarily their home address, but their work's email address, mobile phone numbers, generally get ingested through these systems as well. For somebody to create an AI, they're going to be using one of our platforms, therefore we'll need log on, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So personal data ethical attention is there. So GDPR, which is the European privacy regulations, we acknowledge those, and our governance ensures that we are compliant with GDPR, for example. Okay. No, not necessarily any confidential sensitive type data, but certainly personal data we account for. So we are doing that. But to go back to your specific question, I don't think it's the fact that we may have personal data in there that gives us the issue. I think it really is just purely quality. And it's whether there has, you might not even know that there has been a human in that data pipeline somewhere making a decision. And, you know, you can do the questions then. So was that a yes, no, black and white, almost digital input from a human, or was it an assessment by a human that is more of an analog grayscale, shall we say? And being able to identify what sort of an impact a human may have had on that data, whether the data is comprehensive. There's a wonderful book out called Invisible Women that looks at just purely the, if you like, the data density. And is the data density biased in any way on gender, ethnicity, age, etc.? When you start to ask those questions, they're really important. But then you can do the same thing on machine-generated data as well. Mm. Is that comprehensive? Can that be biased? Quite clearly, sensors, not all sensors are the same. Mm. And sensors can drift. So it's just the same as human bias, even unconscious bias. Mm. So it's a fascinating field that we're looking at putting quality assurance processes around.
I'd be excited to see what you guys come up with, because data seems to be the sticky point for a lot of the world's artificial intelligence startups and businesses, and it really has to be done. But you need a lot of it, so you need to get it the right way. I'd just like to ask you the last question, and it's a bit of a broad brush question, and you can really answer it anyway. For leaders that are facing the collision of aviation and aerospace and AI, and they're faced with having to implement these artificially intelligent systems, what would you have to say to them?
The biggie is around data engineering. Certainly Rolls-Royce and a lot of organizations, their our generation of data goes back decades. The systems were never intended to produce data that was going to be used in the way we now want to be able to use it. So data engineering, and that doesn't come cheap, to be able to have quality data acquisition systems and then people who are going to curate, monitor quality, assure quality, and More and more, there are even AI-based systems that are coming in that can help you with that. So that's goodness. And then really good quality procedures around for the development of AI, because you need to ensure that the deployments bring success. Otherwise, bad reputation, and that will just bring in real difficulties for deployment within your own organization if there's poor reputation, or, as I said earlier, with your market. But what I would say is, you know, the barriers to entry are getting lower and lower. You don't need PhD-based data scientists. It's more and more you can get on and create and build up your internal experience. PhD-based data scientists are very important and will always be there as the technology for the areas where the technologies of low code, no code are lacking, or even to understand those technologies can bring. So we do have, and they're very important and fundamental to our business, our PhD data scientists. But don't use that as, or have that as something that prevents you from getting on and deploying and having a go. But really good quality data, so data engineering.
Cool. Thank you very much, Lee. I've really enjoyed having a conversation with you, and thanks for coming on to the podcast. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Deep Sky. If you'd like to learn more about trustworthy AI, then have a look at the Alethea framework, which is downloadable from the Rolls-Royce website. I've also included some presentations that Lee and his colleagues have given on the ethical AI topic for further listening. If you have any questions about the future of AI in aviation, or would like to have a chat about how AI may impact your business, company, or career in the future, then please send me an email at samuel.chandra01@gmail.com. The email address is in the show notes. Please do come back next week for another engaging conversation. This is Deep Sky.